you know, looking at the calls that we're getting and those people reaching out to us, we've seen a 42% increase in transgender and gender non-conforming people contacting us since the lockdown.
Hello and welcome. This is Queer Recollections. It's a podcast where we're exploring and rethinking queer British history. The LGBTQ helpline Switchboard took its first call on March the 4th, 1974, in the basement of a bookshop in King's Cross. It was set up by a combination of gay activist groups only a few years after the partial decriminalisation of homosexuality, and its purpose was to provide information and advice for the emerging underground gay scene. The Switchboard phone line is still active today, and the calls it's received over the past near half century now has reflected on what was happening in contemporary British queer life. From police entrapment of gay men to lesbian custody battles to the HIV/AIDS crisis and beyond. So to find out a little bit more about Switchboard, both its past and present challenges, I speak to Tash Walker, the current co-chair of Switchboard and also co-producer of The Logbooks, which is a podcast using the notes of volunteers who worked at the helpline to give us a really interesting and often moving account of LGBTQ life. Tash starts us off with a very early logbook entry from July 1975, a year after the phone line opened.
A guy who has been married for 16 years and is gay rang to ask for advice as he thinks his wife is also gay. He has two kids, one of 15 and one of 10, and really needed to talk with someone. One of the reasons that logbook entry drew me in when I was first looking through the logbooks was because how similar it is to calls that we've had throughout our 46 years now. Does make you think about it. So they've been married for 16 years, and that was in 1975, so they would have been married in 1959.
Do you still get calls similar to that today?
Yeah, definitely. We do. We get lots of calls from people who, I guess you can call it the coming out call, and that slices across all ages. You know, we often think of the coming out or coming out as being something for younger people, but it really covers you no matter what age you are. Yes, younger people are thinking about it. You know, and also we're in a society now where maybe it's easier to talk about it and think about it now than it was definitely back in 1975. But yeah, we have people whose children maybe have left home to work or go to university, and they feel like they're able to address their sexuality at that point so as not to, in inverted commas, break up the family. Or people being... And this is definitely calls that I've taken, whose opposite sex partner has died. You know, they're in their 70s, 80s, and they feel like now they're able to come out as homosexual or trans or transgender. They're really difficult calls, but positive as well. And they, you know, often interweave a lot of additional layers and complexity around the time that they grew up in. You know, the way society was then and the impact, the lasting impact that's had on them throughout their life, yeah.
Obviously, the logbooks is so... It's such a rich and varied resource, and I'm wondering why you wanted to bring it to life in the form of the logbooks.
Yeah, I mean, so I found the logbooks when we were clearing out Switchboard HQ, and I just, opening them up and glancing into them, it was like reading someone's diary. It was reading Switchboard's diary, you know. It was full of stories, full of emotion, full of history. This like incredible time capsule. So when we moved it to Bishopsgate Institute, I started reading them, cataloguing them. And the one thing that really jumped out to me was that they were all people's stories. And it was memories of calls, but also of volunteers' experiences, but also memories and a sort of story on Switchboard's history, but on our history here in the UK, or queer history, feeds into a wider global queer history. And it's the voices, isn't it? It's the calls. There's something so special about, I think, capturing this through both the written and spoken memories of people. And it just reflects on what exactly Switchboard was. It was a helpline. It was that voice speaking to other people and those people sharing their memories. So it just felt like a really reflective way to do that for Switchboard's history.
Why do you think this history is important to share?
I think it's so incredibly important. Number one, because it is very much part of history, and yet it is written out of history. You know, as a queer person, growing up, I was born in 1985. I didn't have this history shared with me. I wasn't aware of it. It's so integral in who I am, in the ability I have to walk down the street, you know, holding my girlfriend's hand. It feels like my family history. But it's also so integral in the story of, you know, UK's history and Britain's history. It's social, it's, you know, it's political. It crosses so many different demographics, and it's incredibly intersectional as well. It touches absolutely everything, and I love history. I love queer history even more, and I think that if we're ever able to move forward, we need to study what's happened in our past and learn from everyone who's come before us, learn from these incredible pioneers, and share it. Just, you know, we are a valid part of today's society, and so is our history.
Obviously, there's a kind of a few stories that you've alluded to already, but were there any surprises looking through the logbooks? Anything you weren't expecting?
I think that what was really interesting to me was and I'd heard sort of hearsay stories about it from previous volunteers who I'd met and spoken to, but was this sort of internal issues within the organisation that reflected the external issues in society at that time. From Switchboard being a very much lesbian and gay organisation, with bisexuality not being initially accepted, with transgender people not being accepted. The first transgender volunteer that we had, Diana James, who we interviewed in season one and is appearing in season two again, she was only accepted on the basis that she was a lesbian, and that's how she identified. You know, this is a very different time where the LGBT plus acronym didn't exist. It was LG, then LGB. But also what was really interesting, and volunteers speak really openly about, was the issues of sexism within the charity, because there were issues of sexism within society at that time. Well, not that there still are today, I'm fully aware of that, but you sort of look back in this, you know, in history at these moments, and sometimes they do sort of get a rose-tinted glass put on them. But it's really great, I think, to see those holes and the things and the struggles that have happened internally within different movements throughout history to look at where we are today as well. There were a couple of fun surprises, I suppose, in the logbooks. And one of them was the handkerchief code, which I love to talk about. That was really fun to read, just to sort of break down. For people who don't know what that is, you would wear a handkerchief in your back trouser pocket, and whether you wore it on the left or the right meant a different thing, and the colour of the handkerchief meant a different thing. So if it was like, I think, oh yeah, there are a couple of my favourite ones. What, like, if you've got a black handkerchief, then if you wore it in your left hip pocket, you liked to whip people. And if it was in your right, then you were a whippy. And then one of my really favourite ones was puce. This is a note that was in the logbooks, and on the left pocket it meant that you had unlimited sexual desire, anything, but you wanted to discuss pre-Columbian art first, which really made me laugh. When I was reading through the logbooks, I considered myself to be relatively aware of queer history, but reading it in the words of people who called Switchboard, and the responses from the volunteers and the volunteers trying to push for change and support people, that was a real eye-opener in itself.
I mean, when you think about post-gay liberation British queer life, what role do you think Switchboard has had in it? And in this history and in the development of the history as well?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. Previous volunteer Lisa Power and founder of Stonewall said the milestones of the LGBTQ plus communities can be traced in the calls that Switchboard has taken. So, you know, the Switchboard was there from 1974, initially answering people as they reached out to sort of learn more about this sort of now emerging underground gay scene. And then you had the immediacy of the police raids, people reaching out to Switchboard for advice on what to do if they got arrested. Then you had people being kicked out of home. They ran an accommodation service, linking people who were homeless with other LGBT plus people who would support them and look out for them. Mm. You know, in the 80s, you had the really complex time that just, you know, continued to the 90s and so on of HIV and AIDS, where Switchboard phone lines broke because they were receiving so many calls. It was experiencing it themselves. You know, internally, we lost lots of volunteers. We had volunteers whose partners and friends, family were ill and dying. And it's a really difficult experience, but truly amazing that the community of Switchboard and the volunteers at that time continued to provide that support to the people that called as well. I think it's really fair to say that whatever the community asked, Switchboard answered. And that's like how it worked as an organization. It was so responsive. It was the first point of contact for so many people. But most of all, it was somewhere to reach out to. It was a lifeline. I mean, I know it saved so many lives. There's this amazing story that I heard at Switchboard when I first joined about some volunteers staffing a stall at Pride and a person walking up to them and just literally saying, "Thank you so much for being there. You saved my life," and then walked away. And it's just that incredible moment where what's so difficult with the calls that you get to Switchboard is you don't necessarily know what happens when you put that phone down. And that can be really, really hard. But what's important is that we keep answering the phone and keep picking it up and keep being there for the communities.
One such time Switchboard was on the front lines providing vital information was on the evening of Friday the 31st of April 1999, when a far-right terrorist detonated a nail bomb in the middle of a busy gay pub in Soho. Tash reads the logbook entry from that night.
A bomb exploded in the Admiral Duncan pub in Old Compton Street 3 hours ago. So far, we do not really know exactly what has happened. We have heard worrying reports that 2, 3, or 7 people have been killed and almost 40 injured. There were 2 people down on the rota for this evening who have been very quick to phone and round up the other volunteers to help out. We now have about 8 people taking calls. We are getting lots of calls related to the incident. Many people, including some of those here present, are worried about friends of theirs who may well have been in the area that evening. One of the volunteers was himself only in Brewer Street when it happened. He came straight to Switchboard to organise the effort, along with co-chair. And then underneath this note, there's 3 little stars of people that have called. John Peel of the BBC called to offer his support towards any fundraising or benefit for the victims. And underneath that, Gays Against the Nazis phoned to tell us about the demo tomorrow. And then the last point, a black Jewish gay man from Israel phoned to offer his support. What's really complicated about this time in the logbooks is that you have this entry, and then in the next 2 weeks, I found several entries of people calling Switchboard to tell them that they deserved it, that this was something the community had coming, There's also another entry from a caller who, since the attacks, had been victimized in their home with homophobic abuse, people throwing stuff at their windows. And that was really difficult to read, especially after this sort of community support and rallying together, that those things are often happening in parallel.
Wow. Yeah, it's a lot to take in.
Yeah, it is.
I want to talk a bit about the now as well.
Yeah.
What purpose do you think Switchboard serves in 2020?
I think that's quite an interesting question to ask at this point in 2020. And I feel like my answer would always sort of be the same, whether we'd asked it at the beginning of the year or now, which is, you know, we still live in a society that needs to evolve, that needs to change. There needs to be societal change. There needs to be legislative change. But people still have to come out. You know, we're in this heteronormative world. And so being anything that isn't that, being other, means that you have to do some self-discovery. You need support to do that. And, you know, we speak to people who've got questions around gender identity, sexuality, emotional well-being, sexual health. It's not only answering those questions, but it's providing support. It's providing a space to be listened to be heard. And that's something that I think lots of LGBTQ plus people don't have. I know that when I was growing up, I didn't know about Switchboard, but I definitely would have, I suppose this is in part what drives me as a volunteer at Switchboard, that I would have loved to have reached out to and spoken to someone who not only can listen to me, but also has some experience of being LGBTQ plus. So all our volunteers self-identify as LGBTQ plus. And, you know, people often ask whether Switchboard's still needed, whether a helpline is still needed today. You know, we have our helpline, instant messaging and email as well that we do now. But I think the statistics answer it themselves, really. The calls, you know, the phones are still ringing, the emails are still coming in, the messages are still popping up. And we will continue to answer them for as long as they do. One thing that has obviously changed this year is the pandemic. And that's had a huge impact on our communities, on everyone globally, but also on Switchboard as an organization. We allowed people to do instant messaging and emails remotely, as that was computer-based, but we hadn't got to that point with phones yet. So our helpline was rooted in the phone room at Switchboard. And when the government announced the lockdown, a group of us had to make a really difficult decision, and that was to shut the phone room. You know, our volunteers are always our priority, but we also wanted to find a way to continue to be able to support our callers. And so, you know, we worked through the night, and we'd already started doing some contingency planning, if you like, on remote working. And we managed to take our first ever remote phone call the day after. So shutting the phone room for the first time in 46 years, but not shutting the helpline. And I feel really proud of everyone in the organisation for that achievement, because it's just shown in the calls that we're getting now. You know, it's a really difficult time for everyone. There's increased anxiety, isolation, loneliness, and almost every single call that we're taking features those themes, and that's because of COVID-19. Not that those themes weren't already present, but it sort of shone this magnifying glass on any existing issue that someone has had or has and blown it up. So we've had like a 35% increase in contacts this year in comparison to last year. And we've had, you know, what's interesting is we've had a really, really big increase in people reaching out to us through instant messaging and emails. And we think it's almost directly linked to people not wanting to feel overheard on the phone, you know, at home in these maybe slightly difficult lockdown situations. We've had trans people self-isolating with transphobic families, elderly people, an already really isolated group, you know, reaching out just to speak to someone. But we're still here, we're still answering the phones, and yeah, like I said, I'm really proud of everyone at Switchboard.
I mean, there's clearly still a clear need for the service. I'm interested to talk a little bit more about how the nature or topics of the calls have changed over the years. Obviously, there's more information sources online than there were when Switchboard was first set up in 1974.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I'd say that, you know, when we started, we were much more of an information service, and we became an information and support service, and now we're very much a support service. Not that we don't give referrals to other organisations, so we'll always try to give a referral to a caller at the end of the conversation, even if that's just a referral to call us back again. But yeah, no, the internet's happened, the information is out there, but actually that still people want someone to talk it through. You know, you can absorb as much information online, but there is something rather unique about speaking about that information and the impact it has on you. It's interesting to look at the nature of the topics. I think one thing that always jumps out to me and struck me throughout the whole of the logbooks that I've read is that, you know, I remember reading entries from 1974, 1983, 2000, 2003. And there are calls talking about shame, isolation and loneliness. And those are calls that we are still getting today, you know, and that's really difficult to read and hear, that people are still, people who weren't born when Switchboard started are still experiencing those same emotions that people are today. Obviously, you know, there have been societal changes and legislative changes throughout those years, but the support is still needed and those feelings and emotions are still there.
I've kind of got a theory that there's, and I don't, maybe you can tell me what your experiences have been, because you probably have more objective knowledge on this, but I often think there's an increasing widening gap in understanding between those who have, you know, the ability and resources to understand themselves and those who have kind of been forgotten slightly by the focus on equality advances like gay marriage. I'm kind of thinking of issues like homelessness, which still persist but are never talked about. And I'm wondering if that kind of matches up to your experience in Switchboard.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think it's I think touching on the homelessness issue in one of the episodes in the logbooks, we, in light of looking at the accommodation service that Switchboard offered back in the 70s, we went and spoke to the Outside Project and just to hear what is the situation now. And what has really changed? You know, why are we not looking at these issues? And I completely agree. I think that there can be a lot lost in big markers like equality, marriage equality, if you like. On a personal note, I don't have a problem with like equal marriage. I think we should have equality, but I also think we should be able to define what is right for us, and what equality looks like for us, not what equality looks like in the eyes of heterosexual people, if that makes sense. Because it's different, I think. Also incredibly personal. But yeah, I completely agree. I also think there's just thinking in my head while we're talking about issues and conversations that happened throughout Switchboard's history and now, I think that language has changed a lot and language has evolved so much that the conversations that we have now include a lot more words to talk about gender identity and to talk about sexuality, words that didn't exist in the 70s and the 80s, or weren't as well known in the 90s and so on. And so conversations around gender identity, gender non-conforming people, non-binary people, these people aren't new. They haven't just popped up in 2020. These people have existed for as long as anyone has existed. But now we have the conversations to talk about it more. I think it's interesting to look at the parallels on the experiences of homosexual people in our history to what's happening with transgender people at the moment. The amount of hate that you see going towards the transgender and gender non-conforming community, I personally think is just despicable. And it, and looking at it from a switchboard hat on, you know, looking at the calls that we're getting and those people reaching out to us, we've seen a 42% increase in transgender and gender non-conforming people contacting us since the lockdown, because of many different things, but also because of gender reassignment or gender treatment being paused, or, you know, all of these sorts of things. I can get quite emotional about it, but like, where is people's compassion? Look back in history and look to what others went through, and let's be a community. I think that's something that we're all responsible for.
Do you see a correlation then between, you know, what's printed in the media, what's talked about in the media, and then the calls you're getting at Switchboard?
Yeah, definitely. Online abuse is a real issue as well. I can't imagine. I mean, yeah, I can't imagine what that must be like for the people who are the targets, for transgender people and gender non-conforming people. Looking back, especially with season two, looking at, and also season one, but looking at the amount of hate that homosexual people, lesbians and gay men, got in the, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s. It's just, yeah, it's really difficult. That's why it's so important to speak up and support of everyone within the LGBTQ plus communities.
What's striking about looking at Switchboard's history is how many of the calls it's received in the past has modern relevance and speak to ongoing issues of discrimination. Tash reads out a logbook entry about a young person who rings Switchboard in June 1982.
I had a call from a 19-year-old TV. So this is written in the 70s when language was different to the language we use now. So TV would stand for transvestite. I had a call from a 19-year-old TV who was being / had been thrown out of home this evening by his parents, who had just, in inverted commas, discovered. He'd phoned Samaritans, who gave him CHE, which is the Campaign for Homosexual Equality, / friend number, whose answer phone gave us. We had a long chat, and he will probably phone back tomorrow for long-term advice. Luckily, he seemed reasonably together about his situation and was reconciled to spending a night in his mini. It reminds me of when we went to the Outside Project to talk to them about the logbooks and what we'd found, and Carla Akola, the director, read this entry and just said, yeah, there it is, that's the hidden homelessness. And I remember that really striking a chord with me.
After our conversation, I thought a lot about how the calls to Switchboard have increased since the start of the pandemic, and how Switchboard's overseen so many periods of crisis in the past that this too will pass and also become part of our shared history. I hope you enjoyed listening to Tash talk about Switchboard, both past and present, and do check out her podcast, The Logbooks. It's absolutely brilliant. But until next time, I'm Will, and this has been Queer Recollections.